You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to Anything Ghost, number 275, where you'll learn about a house ghost in York, UK, an experience at Manresa Castle in Washington State, U.S., the haunted house in the Hollow from Tennessee, U.S. These true stories and more are coming your way in episode number 275. Welcome to Anything Ghost. My name is Lex Wall. Anything Ghost is a place where people send their true personal paranormal experiences, aka ghost stories, and I share them with you on the show. If you have one to share, send it to Lex at anythingghost.com. Next month, January, will be the 14th anniversary of Anything Ghost, so please be sure to get your story in. Until then, here comes episode number 275. And the first story is from Jay in York, England. House Ghost. I live in York, England, which is considered the most haunted city in the UK. It's an amazing place, with a beautiful, quirky, old-world charm and centuries of history. It definitely has an eerie, mysterious feel to it. My own experience happened around 2007, while I was studying at the university in York. It was my second year, and my then boyfriend had just moved into a shared house with some of his friends, also students. The house was an old terrace on a busy road. Inside, it looked like it had not been redecorated since the 1970s, and was in desperate need of some TLC. The floorboards were uneven, the walls were dark, and the carpets worn throughout. But as students, they didn't have the money or option to be fussy. It's a sought-after city to live in, and affordable accommodation close to the city walls is not too easy to find. The landlady was very old and could not maintain the house properly, hence the lower rent compared to the surrounding accommodations. When I first entered the house, I immediately sensed a heavy feeling, almost oppressing. My boyfriend, who was very skeptical of the unknown, acknowledged it wasn't a great find, but it would do for a year until we were ready to rent together as a couple. The other people who shared the house with him were 2 other males and a female. The girl, Chloe, rented the downstairs bedroom, and the 3 bedrooms were occupied by the males on the first floor, my boyfriend's room being one of them. I spent most of my time there with him and sit in his room doing my homework on his computer. One evening we were all downstairs in the living room when one of his housemates, who was sitting alone across from the armchair, suddenly jumped up and demanded to know who had just poked him on the shoulder. It was impossible that any of us would have done it. No one had moved. We were all a bit confused, but carry on as normal. Then one night, I was in my boyfriend's room, alone, near his bed, at his desk, doing my work, when out of nowhere, I felt a hand, specifically fingers, run down the side of my hip quite roughly. I screamed and jumped up, running downstairs as fast as I could. A lot of other activity happened in that house, too much to recall. But most notably was one evening, when we were all again sitting in the living room watching TV. My boyfriend decided to go to the shop, two doors down, to get some snacks. I offered to join him, and we left. When we got back, my boyfriend looked confused, as he was looking at one of the bedroom windows above the first floor. "Who's that in Sean's window?" he asked. We opened the front door and walked back into the house, and back into the living room where everyone was sitting. My boyfriend asked them who was upstairs in Sean's room. They all told us that no one else was there. Sean explained what he had seen, and everyone went upstairs and found nothing there. One of the others in the house said that while they were gone, they heard what sounded like footsteps on the floorboards in the rooms above. My boyfriend said it was a male he had seen in the window, looking down at him. I too sensed it was a male that touched me on the hip. Chloe, the female housemate, also once asked if anybody had come into her room on the ground floor in the early morning hours. One time she had woken to see a dark figure of a person crawling on the floor on all fours, as if looking for something on the floor. We all confirmed that none of us had done this, which freaked us out even more. Everyone in that house at some point experienced something. We didn't know the history of the place, but it wasn't a nice energy, and I was very relieved when I didn't have to go back ever again.
Hi Lex, this is Helen from Hertfordshire in the UK. Thanks for your show and all the hard work you put into it. It is very much appreciated. I have two paranormal experiences to share with you. I was lucky enough to have my own large bedroom as a child and a double bed to boot, which I slept on the right side of. One night when I was about 9, I woke up, turned onto my left side and saw a tall, broad, misty figure standing between the other side of my bed and the wall. The figure sort of tailed off from the hips downwards, and although it was very indistinct, I somehow perceived it had shoulder-length hair, was male, had its arms crossed, and was looking down at me rather sternly. I wasn't in the least bit thrown by this, because I was a regular Sunday school attendee and I knew I had a guardian angel. It was probably looking at me sternly because I was a bit of a naughty child. What puzzled me, however, was that he did not appear to have wings, and there was only one of him. So I lay there looking at this figure for quite some time. It didn't move or fade. I considered speaking to it, perhaps asking it something, but I didn't know what to say and, to be frank, thought I probably wouldn't like the answer. So in the end, I just turned over and went back to sleep. In the morning, I went downstairs to breakfast and told my mum, "I've seen my guardian angel." "That's nice, dear," she said, and continued to eat her toast and read the paper, as you would. As I got older, I began to think more about who and what the figure was and what it was doing by my bed. It was only about 5 years ago that I realised that whatever the intention had been, if indeed there was any intention, the result was that I've never had cause to doubt the existence of the paranormal, having seen evidence of it with my own eyes. And as a result of that night, I have made a study of the non-physical and now believe most fervently that the universe is not composed merely of physical particles, but that the prime source from which all its dimensions are made up is consciousness. That is, material isn't prime, consciousness is. But anyway, on to my second story. Back in the 80s, I was working as a chief officer in a local authority. Our offices were in an old Victorian Gothic building, which had once been a training school for priests. It did feel pretty creepy after dark, and another member of staff told me that as they'd left one evening, looking down the deserted main corridor on the ground floor, he had seen a woman moving away from him, but she was only visible from the waist up. Anyway, one Friday evening, I was working late. I was away on leave the following week, but my second in command had just gone off sick and left a pile of important central government paperwork that all had to be checked and cleared, ready for submission the following Monday. It was connected to one of central government's flagship schemes, and the councillors for the local authority were very keen to be seen to be doing the best that they could. There were about 100 files and a lot to be checked in each file. At 10 p.m. I was alone in this big, creepy, empty building. At the far end of the second floor, that's that third floor in American, it was very dark outside, and all the lights were off except for the one in my office. I was angry with the member of staff who had put me in this position, and angry for letting them. I was extremely hungry, very tired, and my eyes were sore. In my office was a fireplace, but long ago it had been boarded up with a sturdy sheet of wood. And suddenly there were two extremely loud knocks from that fireplace, like someone had banged on the sheet of wood with something heavy. It made me almost jump out of my skin. The bangs were very deliberate and controlled. It wasn't as if something had fallen down inside the chimney. Again, after the initial surprise, I wasn't actually frightened. I decided to interpret it as the ghost telling me that it was time to go home. And to be frank, it really was. There were not many files remaining to be checked, so under the circumstances, I'd done an excellent job. I left those last few files to go to another member of staff, somebody I could rely on this time to find out what needed to be done and do it, and left. Fortunately, I could turn the corridor and stair lights on from outside my door and relied on the fact that if the ghost could appear to me, they probably already would have, and I made my way out. I was quite relieved, though, as I locked the huge double doors behind me. On a sort of related point, Lex, I live in a 200-year-old cottage within a stone's throw of a parish church which is over 1,000 years old, and on the site of an even older Anglo-Saxon village. Many Saxon homes, or the foundations of them, were found just to the right of our garden when an old Victorian laundry was demolished, and a Saxon graveyard to the left when some Victorian workshops were pulled down. We would love to know what's actually under our garden. Our house is on a road called Queen Street, but its name before that was Dead Street, because it contains several plague pits. Nevertheless, my home and its environs don't feel in the remotest bit spooky. My family and neighbours love the feel of our neighbourhood and are very proud of its history. But, and here's a funny thing. One of the spookiest locations I have experienced is the West Coast Highway in the US between Santa Barbara and Monterey. I know it's an incredibly beautiful road, and I've only ever done it in sunshine, but heavens, I found it so extremely alienating. When I have mentioned this to other British people, quite a few have said they know what I mean. So, do you think we find it strange because so few people have died along there, and we're more used to living in places where thousands of crowded generations have died, which makes us feel more sort of held and grounded. I'd be interested to know what you think about that, Lex. Okay, well, that's it from me. So, love to all your listeners and take care.
If you want to add some life to your home dining, you need to do what me and so many others are doing. Check out America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh. There's a reason HelloFresh is number one, and it's right there in the name. The recipes HelloFresh delivers to you have fresh, pre-portioned ingredients. If those holidays have you in a stressful time crunch, please don't just grab a quick, unhealthy bite to eat, because HelloFresh is an excellent solution to make your meals easy and stress-free. You won't have to make trips to the grocery store, shop, stand in line, and drive back home again. Why? Because HelloFresh will have a non-contact delivery at your doorstep that will only take 30 minutes to prep and cook. And the packaging is almost entirely recyclable and or already recycled content. The carbon footprint with HelloFresh is 25% lower than store-bought grocery-made meals. Allow me to talk about a HelloFresh recipe that I've already talked to you about. It was a sweet potato carnitas recipe. I loved this recipe so much that I kept the unused portion of the Southwestern spice pack for later use. And I used those spices in a meal I made last night. HelloFresh should sell that Southwestern spice pack. It had an amazing aroma and flavor. But it's not surprising how wonderful that recipe was, because HelloFresh has more than 20 chef-crafted delicious options every week. And to top everything off, each recipe in the meal box comes with a colorful, concise instruction card with pictures to guide you along your journey to your mouth-watering creation. So here's a new HelloFresh offer for you Anything Ghost listeners. You'll get $80 off, including free shipping. Go to HelloFresh.com/anything80 and use the code anything80 to get $80 off, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/anything80 and use the code anything80 to get $80 off, including free shipping. A story from Nate in Ohio. A dark, cold, creepy cellar. When I was in middle school, we lived in a house in a small town in Ohio. The main part of the house was a relatively new build, but the basement had been built up from the log cabin that was the original property. In fact, two walls were still the logs from the cabin. The cold cellar, as we called it, was in the back of the basement. It had a light bulb with a string hanging from it. The problem was that when you tried to turn the light, it would flicker and not light up. We tried replacing the bulb, but that didn't work. Bulbs would work fine if you installed them in any other fixture. At first we thought maybe the light fixture itself was the problem, but I have my doubts. The room was always dark, cold, and creepy. We never were able to see the back wall in that room. I know as a cold cellar it was supposed to be cold, but it was more than that. When my mom and I had to go past the room, we always felt a sense of dread and an overwhelming need to get away from that area. The light would not go more than a few inches past the doorway. I was curious and stubborn when I was a kid, so I tried to find out what was in the room despite my fear of it. When I took flashlights, they would dim until no light would show. As soon as I left the room, the light would work normally. I took candles in, and they would immediately blow out, even though there was no breeze down there. I think what creeped me out the most, though, was one time when I took a hurricane lamp in. It also dimmed as soon as I crossed the threshold. My mom had some experiences. In the 2 years we lived in that house, our cat would never go into that basement. I know this is not your usual ghost story, but it was one of the craziest things I've ever experienced. After we moved, my mom told me that at least one family had lived in the original cabin, and they had been attacked by native people who lived in the area. Here's a story from Timothy in Pembroke Pines, Florida. A Vision from the Past. This story took place somewhere around March to early April of 1958 on my grandparents' farm in East Peoria, Illinois. My great-grandfather had just passed away, so my grandmother, who was pregnant at the time with my mother, went to stay at my great-grandmother's house to comfort her through her time of mourning. That house is also located on a farm down the road a piece. My grandfather was home alone in the library room of my grandparents' house. Now let me give you a layout of the house real quick. The front of the house faces the west. The library room where my grandfather was at during the incident was on the left side of the house, and the doorway from the study went to the right of the house and into the dining room. My granddad heard some crying coming from the dining room, so he got up from his studies and went to the door to the study to investigate. He heard a woman, who he thought was my grandmother at first, crying and saying, "They wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't let me in." My grandfather thought to himself, "Well, that's strange. Who wouldn't let you in? Why wouldn't your mother let you into the house?" The woman had her hands covering her face and had dark hair that came down to her shoulders. She walked in front of the staircase and then in front of the study door, past my grandfather, into the front living room, and headed toward the north wall of the living room. My grandpa followed her into the living room, just as she went right through the wall. My grandfather was lost and trying to make sense of it all. What just happened? He knew as sure as day he had seen this woman walk through the wall. He realized that the woman wasn't my grandmother. The woman wasn't even from the same time period. She was wearing old-fashioned clothing. And come to think of it, the room had been different during this experience, as if it was from a different time as well. And my grandfather remembered hearing voices from another room at the same time of all this. The voices were saying things like, "What are we going to do with her?" My grandfather told no one of the incident for many years, because he didn't want folks to think he was crazy. He tried to do some research on the property, but found nothing. My great-grandfather on my mother's side and his family built the house in the early 1900s on the foundation of an older cabin-style house. Someone showed my grandpa a picture of the house that was there in the 1800s, and it had a door facing north, right where the woman walked through the wall. My grandfather heard the woman and experienced the whole scene over again a couple years later, when my grandmother was pregnant with my aunt. But this time it was more distant, more faded out, and my grandfather was upstairs in his bedroom. He said he didn't even bother to go see the woman that time. Once was enough for him. My grandpa somehow had a strong feeling and believed that the young woman had become pregnant outside of wedlock, and the family threw her out into the cold to fend for herself. He thought maybe she froze to death. In the 1800s, one who had a baby outside of a marriage wasn't always welcome with open arms and was seen as a disgrace, even shunned at times. It is really sad if that's what happened to that poor woman. And I have another story. They're doing some construction next door here. I'm recording at home, you know, during the COVID thing. So I'm doing the recording at home. Excuse me, hit the mic stand. But I'm doing the recording at home, and they're doing construction next door. So if you hear a lot of banging and power tools, that's what it is. It's not ghosts. This next story is from Jacqueline in California. Teenage girl spirit. This happened around 2008. I was in high school at the time and living with my parents in Phoenix, Arizona. We were living in an apartment complex and were looking into renting a bigger place. My dad's coworker told him about a home for rent, and he set up a showing for us. The home was beautiful. We got a tour. My sister and I were so excited that we even called dibs on one of the bedrooms. Once back home, I figured my parents would come to an agreement and we would eventually rent the place, so I did not bother to ask them about it. But time passed, and I never heard anything about the rental. I asked my mom what was going on and why we hadn't moved in yet. She told me, "I didn't want to say anything to you or your sister, because I didn't want you girls to feel spooked out." While we were getting the tour, I saw a girl walking just behind you and your sister. It immediately gave me the chills. Now that I think about it, yes, it was beautiful, but there was a weird vibe. Later on, my dad asked his co-worker if anything had happened there. The co-worker told him a family lived there, and their teenage daughter had committed suicide in her bedroom. Which turns out, that was the bedroom my sister and I called dibs on. I'm glad we didn't move in. If you want to find out what this true ghost storyteller does when he takes a break, then download the free-to-download Match 3 puzzle game, Best Fiends. That's Best Fiends, friends without the R. And if you find me, you'll find out that I'm on level 835 already. Whenever things get puzzling for me in my day-to-day activities, I take a break and clear a few levels on Best Fiends. For me, it's like a digital version of meditating. It's so relaxing. I play Best Fiends via Facebook, but have recently found the mobile version to be more rewarding. I have many Facebook friends competing with me on Best Fiends. But as of late, I'm competing to reach Mount Boom before my old college buddy of mine reaches it. One day I'm ahead of him by 15 games, and I'll contently log off. Then the next time I log in, I find he's past me. So back up to building my characters, capturing gold, and blowing up slugs with bombs. What I find most attractive about Best Fiends are the colorful, personality-filled characters. These characters can be upgraded, so you can collect gold bars, diamonds, keys, and other prizes, and spend them to make your powers grow, as they help you defeat slugs and make your way across Best Fiends' map on your journey to Mount Boom. If you need to step away from daily stress or boredom, join in on over 100 million downloads of this 5-star mobile puzzle game, because Best Fiends is boredom's worst nightmare. And let me tell you, once you download Best Fiends, you won't be able to put it down. You'll be repeating the phrase, "just one more level," over and over, and soon you'll be wondering how you ever found the time to be bored. So download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
Hi Lex and Anything Ghost listeners, this is Andrea again in Northeast Tennessee, and I wanted to share, I guess you could call it a ghost story, maybe, I don't know, it involves a Ouija board, and I know a lot of people have varying opinions on how talking boards, spirit boards work, whether or not you should use them, and so on. I have used them for probably going on 30 years now, and I've never had a negative experience, never had anything bad happen, no negative fallout, anything like that. Certainly had some spooky and strange occurrences, but, you know, that's partially part of the reason why you use it, right? So, anyways, onto the story. This happened, I believe it was New Year's of 2016. My dad was working for our local, the city here, for their New Year's festivities, so I wasn't going to be home until the wee hours of the morning, and my mom didn't want to, you know, spend New Year's all alone, so I went to stay with her, and I took my Ouija board, because it was a perfect opportunity for her, for the two of us to use it, because my dad doesn't like to have it around, so if he's not around, we can use the board. So anyways, we're using the board, had been using it for a while up to this point, and at one point, it started just randomly spelling something out over and over again, it seemed, and rather quickly, and we were finally able to figure out that it was spelling Tammy Leon, as if it was one word. It took us a little bit to figure it out, it was over and over, and we were finally like, okay, Tammy Leon, and then it, you know, the board just kind of calmed down. It was almost like it was in response to us figuring out what was being spelled out. So we continued to use the board, and the spirit that we were communicating with told us that her name was Sue. She gave her last name and stated that she was my dad's aunt. And at this point, my mom looked at me and said, your dad does not have an aunt by this name. He doesn't have an Aunt Sue. So we continued to use the board. I don't really remember what else that Sue told us. And so anyways, the next morning when we were speaking to my dad, we just kind of, we didn't want to let him know, we were using a Ouija board, because he really does not like to have that in his house. But we kind of brought up the topic of his Aunt Sue in a way. And, my mom said, you never had an Aunt Sue, did you? And he was like, yeah, I did. And we just looked at each other and didn't say anything. And then my mom said, well, I've never heard you talking about her before. And he said, well, her name, and I cannot remember what he said her name was. I think it was like Rita Sue or something like that. And he said that the family had always called her Rita. And she didn't like, I think that's what it was. She didn't like that name. So when she got older to be a teenager, young adult, she started going by Sue. That she'd rather, asked her. So her friends and thing, people like that, that's what they called her. And he said that her husband, Leon, always called her Sue. And when he said that, we just looked at each other. And he said, my mom, I think, again, said, well, you've never told me about her. I've never heard you talk about her. And he said, well, I never really knew her. She died when she was pretty young. And I never got a chance to know her, really. He said, all I know is that she was married to a man named Leon, and that she had a daughter named Tammy, and that he met them once or twice when he was a kid. So at this point, me and my mom are trying to be really inconspicuous, not trying to raise any suspicions, but looking at each other like, what? Eventually later on, she told him about our Ouija board session and told him about that, and he just, I don't know what his response was, but it was kind of a mind-blowing thing. Even though I've used boards, and I do think that we can communicate with those who have gone on, that's probably the most mind-blowing experience I've ever had with the boards. It's the only thing that I've communication that I've ever had where I've been able to verify the information that I would receive from whoever I was communicating with. So my mom and I have talked with her through the board several times after that, but it's been a while since we have been able to get in touch with Sue on the board again. But I just thought that was, I just think that's really neat, and thought it might be something that you and other Anything Ghost listeners may enjoy as well. Take care.
And here's a story from Amy in Washington State, U.S. Manresa Castle. If anyone has ever visited Port Townsend, Washington, they might have noticed a giant, ominous-looking castle-style building looming over them from the bluffs above. A place resonating with pure creepiness. It is known as the Manresa Castle. This place has beckoned me since I was a kid, and I've always loved ghost stories, haunted houses, cemeteries, battlegrounds, and everything in between. And because my stepdad grew up near Port Townsend, we would often visit in the summer and camp in nearby Olympic National Park. My parents were awesome, and they always gave in to my amusements. So we would always stop at the Manresa Castle, and they would let me run around and explore. The history of the castle is quite lengthy and dark. I believe it was originally built in the 1800s for a wealthy family that included a father, mother, and their young daughter. The father has been seen around Manresa, wearing a white suit, and has been photographed as a full-body apparition many times in various parts of the house. I got to see several of those pictures throughout my visits over the years, but now they don't show them to people due to many visitors getting freaked out. The father's wife, who I'll refer to as the Lady in Black, has been seen as a full-body apparition on several occasions around the castle, especially by people who have worked in the building for years. The ghost has a very ominous presence and is viewed as being a dark, evil entity. The little girl wearing a Victorian dress has also been seen, heard, and felt throughout the castle. I'm not sure when the house transferred hands, but the castle was eventually taken over by monks and used as a monastery for years. One of the monks, for some reason, committed suicide by hanging himself in the attic. Apparently, and sadly, noises are often heard from that particular attic space on a regular basis. Years later, after the castle once again switched hands and was renovated into a historic hotel, tragedy struck when a girl jumped from her third-floor hotel window. Legend has it that she was awaiting her lover, who was away at sea, and I believe the story goes that she either got word of his death or that he fell in love with another woman. I'm not sure which, but either way, she unfortunately took her own life. Her ghost is known to cause havoc on anyone who sleeps in the hotel room from which she jumped to her death. Stories from workers in the castle report that many people end up leaving in the middle of the night after sleeping in her room, or even just going out to sleep in their car. That particular room, filled with the despair the girl must have left behind, is not known to be a happy place inside the castle. As I mentioned, I fell in love with Manresa Castle at first sight, and it's still one of my favorite places in the world. There's something so majestic about its haunting past, the old furniture, the creaky floors. It all just pulls me in and makes me fascinated with the paranormal even more. I had visited Manresa Castle several times over the years, but never got a full-on walkthrough of the building by a worker. That is until one night when I introduced the place to my then-boyfriend, Jeff. We showed up in the evening just to walk around the place a bit and explore, but it was winter, and I think business at the hotel might have been slow. We got chatting with the woman at the front desk, who had worked at Manresa Castle for years, and was more than happy to walk around with us, letting us pick her brain and see inside of many of the rooms I had only heard in stories about before. This was the holy grail for me. Jeff was very much a skeptic, but you could tell the lady's stories were still freaking him out. She walked us down into the dining area where the breakfast was served to hotel guests and told us about the Lady in Black entity that came out from behind the ice machine late one night and headbutted a gentleman who was merely looking for the ice machine, and how that gentleman ran out of here screaming. She also told us about how she was working the breakfast shift one morning and heard something behind her, and she turned around to see the Lady in Black directly behind her as a full-body apparition completely blocking the doorway. She even recalled washing dishes in the sink that same morning and feeling hands in the water with hers. And then later, watching an entire pitcher of orange juice get flung off the counter. It was shoved so violently, in fact, that orange juice dripped off the ceiling and back down to the floor. This lady's stories were endless, and we listened in pure fascination and intrigue. She also walked us into a room where loud talking was often heard, so much to the point where guests on the other side of the wall would complain about the noise to the front desk. She literally had to get keys and open the door to the room to show the guests that there was nobody in there. One of the memorable incidents from that night, though, happened when we were in another room. This was the room where the little girl in the Victorian dress was often seen and heard, so much, in fact, that housekeeping staff would wear earbuds and listen to music while cleaning, so they wouldn't get bothered by the little girl. While we were talking about this, Jeff said he felt something touch his butt. No one was standing next to him, and even as much as a skeptic as Jeff was, he admitted he felt a touch and that it was playful and cute. All in all, though, it was enough to make him think twice about his skepticism, even if he wouldn't admit it. After exploring all over the castle and feeling so incredibly grateful to this lady for her in-depth walkthrough and telling us all her wild stories of the place, Jeff wanted to get the heck out of there. I wanted to stay the night, though. It was the off-season and the prices were good, and it was already getting late. I just didn't feel like driving around town and looking for another hotel. Plus, it was always my childhood dream to stay at the Manresa Castle. But Jeff just wouldn't have it, and so we left. We found another hotel a few miles away. Nothing fancy, nothing historic, just your atypical place to pass the night. I sat in the car in the parking lot while Jeff ran in to inquire about pricing, and I remember an ominous feeling coming over me out of nowhere. In fact, it even felt like it was directly behind me in the back seat, enough to make me turn to see if someone was there. I got so scared that I eventually got out of the car and joined Jeff at the hotel front desk as he talked to the receptionist. Sitting in my own car just freaked me out too much. We ended up staying there the night, and it was a very normal evening. We got dinner, swam in the pool until it closed for the night, took showers and watched some TV before falling asleep. That night, I woke up screaming in my sleep. I normally dream vividly every night, so it's not unusual for me to have dreams that I recall. But this one terrorized me. In fact, what was so notable about the dream was that the entire thing was fine and normal, nothing freaky or worth mentioning, until one small thing happened. I remember out of nowhere in my dream, I was going perfectly fine. The lady in black from Manresa Castle walked up behind me as if she just manifested out of nowhere, and she came straight up to my face and slapped me hard. Just decked me across the face. I remember seeing the scowl of the evil on her face as she came closer to me and hit me. That's when I immediately woke up and screamed. Jeff, of course, heard all this and woke up and asked what in the world was going on. As I sat there shaking and panicking, all I could say was, "I saw the lady in black. I saw her." To this day, I don't know if it was merely my own brain simply having a nightmare based on the haunted castle walkthrough, or if the lady in black was really inside my head haunting me. I can still recall that random moment in that random dream just vividly today, when she came straight up to my face. It's forever burned in my brain, and it still freaks me out. Maybe it was a good idea after all that we didn't stay in the hotel that night. Years later, back in 2018, I was back in Port Townsend with my now husband, not Jeff, and stepdaughter on a trip to the Olympic Peninsula. I'd asked them well in advance if they wanted to stay at the Manresa, and both were pretty enthusiastic about it. Even with the lady in black in my dream that night so long ago, I still love the place, and I will always pop in whenever I'm in the area. When we booked online, we didn't get to choose our hotel room. But funny enough, we got the room directly across the hall from where the girl jumped to her death. We played cards in the dining area that night, where the lady in black had been seen so much. And I stopped to look at the lady in black's old-time photo on the wall, as portraits of both her and her husband are featured in the castle's library area. She still had that ominous look on her face, one that I, too, will never forget as long as I live. Nothing ghostly happened to us that night, at least beyond the normal creepiness that always resonates from the Manresa. But I think I'm happy to keep it that way. As I witnessed firsthand, the dark spirits are nothing to be messed with. In fact, I send out prayers of hope for all the spirits that are locked within those castle walls, especially if they would indeed rather move on, but perhaps do not know how. The lady in black, her husband in white, their daughter in the Victorian dress, the monk who sadly took his life, the woman who sadly jumped from the window, and any other spirits that find themselves wandering the many floors of the Manresa Castle, I wish them peace. The loss of a loved one is something that we will most likely have to face one day. Life is an emotional roller coaster, so it's important to have someone you can lean on or talk to when the need arises. So it's great to know the online counseling of BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp, is there with a licensed professional therapist to help you through trying times. At BetterHelp, you'll be matched with your own licensed professional, someone who will help you develop strategies for coping with grieving, with stress, relationships, anger, family conflicts, sleeping, anything that's affecting the happiness and well-being of your life. And you will address these matters without ever having to leave the comfort of your own home, and knowing that anything you share is completely confidential between you and your licensed professional. If money problems are an issue, it's good to know that BetterHelp is more affordable than your brick-and-mortar offline counseling. Plus, BetterHelp has financial aid available. BetterHelp is professional, it's convenient, it's affordable, it's confidential, and all of you Anything Ghost listeners from other countries, listen up. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. So it's no surprise that because so many people are now using BetterHelp, that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Don't let that problem linger. Get some help, some better help, and start living that happier life you deserve. As an Anything Ghost listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting www.betterhelp.com/anythingghost. That's 10% off your first month by visiting www.betterhelp.com/anythingghost. Join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/anythingghost. BetterHelp.com/anythingghost. And I'm going to give my voice a rest, and we're going to hear a story from Will in Virginia, Ghostly Footfalls.
Hello, Lex, and all you Anything Ghost listeners out there. This is my third submission to the podcast. I'd like to dedicate this story to my oldest brother, the Master of the Macabre, who got me into the paranormal. Unfortunately, this first tale anyway didn't happen to me. It actually happened to my wife. And I wish for her sake it was my own experience, because I think I would have been almost excited about it. But a lot of times these things don't seem to happen to me. They happen to people close to me, and then I relay the story to y'all. But we take an annual trip up to the mountains each year here in Virginia. There's a bed and breakfast that we love, nestled deep in the mountains. It's a magical place. It's fantastic. This year, though, we stayed in a different room that was actually in a separate building from the main bed and breakfast. It's sort of off from the rest of it. And we did that because we were taking our dog. And we have a little baby, so we thought we should probably be away from the rest of the guests for their sake, so they weren't having to listen to the dog and the baby running around. Well, it was a little bit creepy being set off from everybody else. It's extremely dark and isolated at night. Wonderful stargazing. It's beautiful out there. But a little bit eerie when you realize that you're sort of up the mountain a little ways from everyone else. Well, on our way home, we were heading to a state park to do some hiking. So we're driving through beautiful mountain roads and switchbacks and looking at the fall foliage, and my wife says, you know, there's something I need to tell you, and I suppose my mind could have gone in a lot of different directions, but of course I say, did you see a ghost? And she said, well, yeah, but not so much saw one, but heard one. So this bed and breakfast is historic, the way we like it. The buildings are old. It's great. And in this particular structure, we're on the second floor. And there are no rooms below us. So again, we're by ourselves in this building, which is why it's the sort of dog-friendly, baby-friendly room. but the floor below us served as some kind of an office for the staff. There's a couple of rooms down there, but no one's staying there. There were two entrances to our room up on the second floor, one up from that office and then one sort of from the outside. That's like a private entrance. So on our second night, around midnight, as I'm slumbering away, my wife wakes up to the sound of these giant, like, walnuts falling on the roof. So it's like a tin roof with a walnut tree. And so these things are kind of banging on the roof all night, and I noticed them as well. But what's odd is she woke up to that sound. But as she's laying there, she hears these footsteps below us on the first floor, coming in through the front door and walking all the way in a steady, determined footfall to the back of the first floor, to the back door. She didn't think a whole lot of it. I mean, maybe it could have been hotel staff, you know, kind of closing things up. It wasn't that late. But it happened two more times. So as the night goes on, she wakes up at 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. to the same noise. Footsteps walking from the very front entrance of this building all the way to the back. I asked her to describe them, and she said they weren't boots so much, but almost like a dress shoe, like something you'd wear to a formal party, or maybe old-timey shoes. But basically, they had a heel to them, so it's almost like a little bit of a click to them. And she mentioned that the footfalls were pretty confident and seemed to be sort of a larger man because the strides were far apart. And it made it to the front, from the front to the back in like 8 to 10 steps. And it's not a huge house, kind of just like a typical size house. So not crazy that it could do that. But, you know, it was like 8 or 10 steps there. But it happened over and over like a broken record. So, Lex, what's really weird about it? And I guess to cap off that story, on the first floor of that building, they have added partitions and walls that clearly aren't original to the historic house, that they were added years later to create office space for this bed and breakfast. So, you know, I mentioned that we can come in through the front door and access our room through a stairway. When you walk in through there, there is a wall that essentially bisects the entire house. It is physically impossible for anyone to walk in a straight line from the front door to the back door. You would have to walk into one of the offices and kind of loop around through a couple of doors, which are locked at night, I'll mention, in order to even get to that back room. So the thought that it could have been hotel staff coming in to lock up at midnight and 3 and 4, it's just not physically possible. Whatever was coming in through that front door and those old-timey shoes with heels, as she described them, walked directly through that wall and to the back door. And I asked her, why didn't you wake me up? I would have loved to have heard them. You shouldn't have woken me up. And she said that her gut instinct in that moment, and this is really her only paranormal experience, so it's not like, she's not really into this stuff like I am. You know, she's not reading about it and watching movies and hoping to learn more about what comes next. This is not something she's invited into her life. So when she realized what was happening and it dawned on her that this was a moment that would effectively change her life and that something like this can happen, that there is more to the world than what meets the eye, In that moment, she realized that if she acknowledged it was real and either woke me up or went looking to see who it was, that somehow it could invite this thing into her life and make this part of her world. It would make it real. And she didn't want to take any chances on that. That this thing could follow us home, or it would open her up to other experiences. She felt it was, leave well enough alone and go back to bed. I totally respect that, and I'm glad she didn't wake me up, because I would have been much more scared than she was. So that's the first tale for y'all. Ghostly footfalls at a historic bed and breakfast. I don't know if we're going to stay in that room again. We will definitely be going back to that hotel. I don't think I want to stay in that room, frankly. That was just hearing her take on it was pretty creepy. My second story is it's a quick one. It's simple. I haven't had a lot of experiences myself. However, oddly enough, like a week after this, after the bed and breakfast incident, really, really strange. And again, I've never had anything like this before. We're asleep at home. I remember my dog was in our bed, and this might have been a waking dream, which Lex, I know you don't really like to play these on your show too much if they're not really connected to the paranormal, but I will say this. I'm laying there, and I just feel 100% awake. There's nothing odd about what's going on. I see my dog laying at the foot of my bed. I kind of look around the room. I realize I'm not sleeping well. Just very, very conscious. You know, this isn't dreamlike at all. And this white mist comes in from my bedroom door and just heads to the corner where there's a chair. And this mist basically sort of forms and hovers over the chair and just stays there for probably 10 seconds. And in my mind, I'm saying to myself, I'm not dreaming right now. This is really happening. I am taking this in and logging this as a memory. This is not a dream. This is a memory. This is happening. What is that? But, you know, same kind of thing as my wife. In that moment, I didn't feel any desire to jump up and take a picture or, you know, try to document it. I just watched it fade away, and I just promptly went back to sleep. But the next morning, I woke up and thought, gosh, that was not a dream. What was that? And not to try to make too much of it, but I will say that within the next week after that happened, my grandfather nearly died, had a heart attack. He lived, but it was a close call. My mother ended up in the hospital. It's hard to say that all that is linked, but if there was ever a year, if there was ever a time for something to come visit and just sort of watch over us or provide some kind of comfort, I'd like to think this was a pretty good time to do it. it's been a rough year, you know. That's my second story. And Lex, I love the show. I hope y'all had enjoyed listening. You know, I try not to send any stories in that are thin, that don't really have much to them. I want it to be fun for everybody to hear. But anyway, please keep up the good work. Everyone keep sharing your stories. Stay open-minded. Know that there is more to this world than meets the eye. I think we all need a reminder of that right now. So everyone take care, and have a great holiday.
Ghost of a Murdered Woman haunts the house in the hollow, Dixon, Tennessee, 1906. Dixon County, Tennessee, was formed sometime in the early 1800s. By 1860, during the American Civil War, Dixon was in possession of the U.S. federal troops. During the time when the federal troops occupied Dixon, a couple lived in a makeshift log cabin in a certain corner of the county. They called themselves Mr. and Mrs. Sweeney. The gentleman, locals said, looked to be in his 80s, while his wife couldn't have been more than 40. The Sweeney's improvised log cabin sat on the outskirts of the U.S. federal camp. Mrs. Sweeney was an active and industrious person who would travel many miles into the country, gather up country produce, and sell it to the soldiers in the federal camp. Those who met Mrs. Sweeney said that although she appeared modest and illiterate, they believed she was disguising her actual shrewd character, a deep intellect with an accomplished education. Many said they believed she had a great amount of money when they arrived in Dixon, and she continued to accumulate more money while living there. Mr. Sweeney, on the other hand, seldom left the log cabin for an extended time. He did most of the housework and appeared to be the servant in the relationship. So it appeared to the locals that the 80-year-old wealthy man had been abducted by the younger woman. And that was how the couple lived, never telling anyone of their past or their future plans. After a while, the federal camp was evacuated and the troops departed. The Sweeneys were thought to have left with the troops, but nobody knew for sure exactly when the couple left, or even where they went. They said the Sweeneys disappeared as if the earth swallowed them up, or as if zephyrs had whispered a summons to depart, and they were wafted away. And like so many other incidents during the Civil War, the Sweeneys were soon forgotten, and that was the end of them. Life of a Recluse. About 10 years after the Sweeneys disappeared, the Civil War was over and peace had been restored. A woman wandered into Dixon County. She claimed to be from Ohio, but would not go into any details of her past. She gave her name as Lucretta Gurley. She was a shrewd and talkative person, but whenever asked about her life, she would withdraw from the conversation. And it wasn't mentioned in this article, but the story seems to be that they're trying to convey that this Lucretta Gurley was believed to be the same person as the 40-year-old woman who claimed to be Mrs. Sweeney a decade before. Shortly after coming into the county, the woman purchased land and built a simple frame house for herself. She lived there comfortably alone. She would call for what she wanted and pay for what she got. Other than that, she had no visitors. She was simply a recluse. One autumn morning, someone visited Miss Gurley regarding a business matter. Upon getting to her home, they found the door open. After calling out to her, nobody came to the door, so they entered the home. They went into the kitchen and found her lying dead on the floor. She had been dead for several hours. Investigators said her death was natural causes. However, the locals believed she had been murdered for her money. Mrs. Gurley was buried. Her home was left to others by the courts, and it was soon rented out. Even though she had been able to buy goods from businesses, and many swore she was well off, not one cent of the reclusive woman's money was ever found in the home. This confirmed the belief that Miss Gurley had been murdered and robbed of her money on that autumn day. As I said earlier, after her death, Miss Gurley's home was being rented out by the new owner. But renters would only stay a short while. This happened several times. Soon it became apparent that renters were leaving because the simple frame home was haunted. The renters complained of strange noises and seeing strange things. Lights, which were mostly candles and lanterns back then, were quickly blown out as if by an icy breath. And if they were able to light them, the flame would not keep burning for very long. Some tenants would hear a strange melody, sad, mournful, and low, and it would merge into a groan, then a shriek, and finally end with a piteous sobbing. And then the sobbing would slowly die away, as if lost in the distance. On other occasions, tenants of the house would see the dim outline of a woman at night rapidly approaching the house, but she would never arrive at the door. However, there were times when the apparition did reach the door and entered the house. At those times, the house would shake and tremble like the sound of thunder, and that was followed by shrieks and groans. Other tenants said there were times when the house would become brilliantly illuminated, and then as suddenly as it started, it would settle into impenetrable darkness. Doors, although locked and bolted, would suddenly be thrown open. This would be followed by the sound of footsteps trampling through the room. Many other complaints were made by tenants about the haunted house in Dixon, but no one was ever able to determine a cause for the disturbances. The haunted home of the murdered Lucretta Gurley soon became known as the House in the Hollow. Locals believe that the spirit of Miss Gurley replayed her murder every night in the room where she was choked for her money. Nobody would rent this place any longer, or even dare to enter it. So the house sat for years, untouched, as her ghost relived her last moments, night after night. Some said that, from time to time, they could hear her wild screams of distress. It wasn't too long before the legend of the House in the Hollow spread outside Dixon, Tennessee. Eventually, news of the ghosts aroused the interest of some unbelieving Nashville, Tennessee men. Talmadge McElroy, J. Russell Lyle, and Dr. S. G. Workman, a dentist. The three men heard about the ghost in Dixon and decided to spend the night in the house and solve the mystery of the so-called spirit. So they went. They saw. They returned. They returned faster than they went. After one night in the house in the hollow, the three men returned home believing in ghosts and admitted the house in the hollow was indeed haunted. And let me backtrack and tell you about the story of those three men visiting the house in the hollow. So in August of 1906, the three men made their 40-mile trip by train from Nashville to Dixon and arrived at 5 p.m. After arriving, they had dinner, after which a local Dixon piloted the three men to the house in the hollow. The house was about 1,000 yards from the hotel they stopped at. I guess they had planned to investigate the haunted house, but not spend the night there. It wasn't until 10 p.m. that evening that the three men began to walk over to the house with the directional aid of a man and his son. As the group approached the house, they saw a bright light. It looked like a ball of fire and was as big as a man's head. But as they started to walk into the yard of the property, the light suddenly went out, and they never saw it again. At that point, the man and his boy told the three men that they had no intention of entering the haunted house. The three men tried in vain to convince the two to go inside with them, but they refused. The house was a little dilapidated frame structure, nestled back in a bunch of trees, which in itself probably gave the house a gloomy look during the day. But in the evening, the house was extremely creepy looking. The doors were all closed, so the men had to go around to the side and crawl through a window. Upon entering the home, and even though they did not believe in ghosts, they admitted to each other that they felt the hair stand up on their heads and had a creepy feeling running up and down their spines. They were supplied with candles and matches, so they made some light and began exploring the house. They finally came to the room where Miss Gurley had been murdered. It was dingy, murky. It was crumbling and decaying with age, a classic example of what a haunted room would look like. In one corner of the room where she was murdered were two doors, and to the left of one of the open doorways was a fireplace. Near the fireplace was a big hole that led down to the basement. Well, they assumed it was a basement, as they never went down there to investigate. The three men had brought a camera with them, and they set it down and focused it on the two doors and the fireplace. They set up the flash and then stepped back behind it, waiting for an appearance of the ghost. Late in the evening, the group distinctly observed a grayish or whitish-looking object come through one of the doors. It flit across the room in the direction of the fireplace. It seemed to stand there, quivered a moment, and then darted away again, seemingly sinking through the floor. They felt strange and quietly nudged each other as they watched the object. Lyle set off the flash, but the ghost had disappeared. About an hour later, the ghost made a reappearance and followed practically the same pattern of movement. Once again, Lyle set off the flash, and this time he captured a photo of something in front of the fireplace. You can see the photo at anythingghost.com. I'll have it there with this story. After Lyle set off the flash the second time, they began to hear strange noises. The noises seemed to be coming from beneath the house and sounded as if someone were groaning or was in distress. "Well, we couldn't stand it any longer," Mr. McElroy said, "and we lit out for town." When asked why they didn't go down under the house to investigate the noises, McElroy replied, "Well, you come on down and go down there and see for yourself. You're welcome to go down under the house, but none of that for mine. This picture I have shown you was a flashlight of the object we saw in the room. That is gospel fact. I don't know what it is, but I can tell you it was something. It moved and looked like that thing you see in the picture." The other two men told almost the same story as McElroy did. Plans were made for another party to investigate the house in the near future, but they added that there were going to be reinforcements before any more ghost hunting was done at that house. And I was unable to find any information on a follow-up ghost investigation at the house in the Hollow. Okay, everyone, that's it for Anything Goes Show number 275. 276 is coming in January, and that will be the 14th anniversary show of Anything Goes. So be sure to get your story in if you want to share your personal ghost story or local ghost legend, and then I'll add it to the big anniversary show of Anything Ghost. Have yourself a wonderful holiday season, everyone. I'll talk to you in the big anniversary show of Anything Ghost in January 2021. Until then, take care of yourself and take care.